At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Scoop, where you get the scoop on this week's news. My name is Jenna, and this is Smarter News. Well, there is no rest for the weary. There's a reason why that saying exists, actually, and I think we're all experiencing it right now. We have several weeks of breaking news and a lot of changes when it comes to the 2024 election cycle, and that's really where we're going to focus today. So welcome. It's great to have you guys here. Clearly, there's been some very big developments for the election of 2024 this weekend. We had President Joe Biden step back from the Democratic Party nomination. We had his endorsement of Vice President Harris. But even though we have that information, we still have a lot of unknowns. So that's what my goal is for you today. We have a couple other news items I want to make sure to have on your radar, and we'll kind of weave them in throughout the broadcast. But this is the story of the moment, and all of us have questions as to what this actually means. And so just to kind of ease into it in a little bit of a different way, I got this news yesterday. This might be one of those situations. It may or may not rise to the level for you where you were like, where were you when you found out that this was going to totally change? You know, where were you when you found out, for example, there was an attempted assassination on former President Trump's life? Where were you when you found out that President Biden was going to step back from the party's nomination? You know, we're having a lot of these moments. So I heard this, I saw it as whenever I pick up my phone and I see breaking news alerts from multiple sources, I think, okay. And it's not like around the 7 o'clock a.m. period, you know, when everyone's sort of blasting out things to you that don't really matter. You ever get those blasts on your phone? You're like, why did anyone think that this was the thing to push to someone's phone for an alert? You know, you open a story that's completely obscure. But when you see multiple things at like a strange time, I think, okay, what's happening here? And I saw the news, obviously, that President Biden had stepped back. And the juxtaposition of this news with real life was challenging because my youngest child, I have three kids, my youngest, my four-year-old is turning five tomorrow. And this is a very emotional thing for me, in part because the birth of True, his name is Truett, call him True, really coincides with when Smarter News started. You know, Smarter News was just in its infancy when True was born. And then we were suddenly catapulted as the pandemic happened, and there were so many different breaking news stories going into 2020. True was born in 2019, late 2019. So he's turning five. And so I actually was hosting a birthday party for some of his friends. I had a bunch of, you know, 4 and 5 year olds, 3 year olds coming over to play, and was getting this news about the presidential election that obviously was a very big deal that demanded some attention for sure. And the juxtaposition of these headlines, right? The big headline that was the national headline and personal headline just didn't seem to fit until I took a moment and thought, well, this is on purpose. This is actually really important because everyone has family life action taking place on a Sunday. There's multiple things that we're all handling in our own lives. So what do we do to make this clearer so you don't have to have the television on or the radio on or streaming something, you know, every hour just to sort of feel like you have your hands around the situation. So I shared a little bit of news and we'll go over that today. But it was at the end of the party where I decided, okay, I'm going to turn on the television and look at some of the news broadcasts. I like to play that game where you skip across different channels. You know, you have Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, and they're like totally broadcasting different realities to the world. But it's a good way of getting a handle on like what different news outlets are talking about. I was really looking at MSNBC because Rachel Maddow was on, and I thought, okay, this will be good to watch. And we were cleaning up, and True comes into the room, and True has a sense of humor. I don't know where he gets it. I mean, but he just has naturally had a sense of humor and like good timing, which you think comes with language, but isn't. He just is sort of funny. So he walks into the room and he's like looking at the television set with his like little four-year-old attitude. And he's like, Mom, this is trash. I was like, Did you just turn into like an angry old man? Is that what five is going to bring for me? This is trash, Mom. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is the news. Welcome to your mother's life right now. This is trash, Mom. I was like, listen, I need to watch this because there's some big news. President Biden is no longer running for president. So he sits there and he watches it with me a little bit. And he goes, Mom, I kind of feel sad for President Biden. And that was his reaction. And I think the reason why I share that is that those are very different emotions. And I think many of us have had many different emotions over the last several weeks, maybe within the last 24 hours. And mixed into all of that is a little stress and anxiety about the uncertainty of what's ahead and what's actually going on. And that's what the news actually can provide for you, is at least a crystallization of information. So we know what we know, but we know what we don't know, and we can kind of prepare ourselves. But being in the space of like, what's going on and how is this taking place is not necessarily a good place to be. And I think True actually summed things up for us. You know? There was a little bit of anger and anxiety that came from him, and a little bit of sympathy too. So that's True. Well, he'll turn five tomorrow. We'll see what he has to say about the news at the end of the week. Maybe he should be our political analyst for the election of 2024. So here's how I'm going to approach this. We're going to divide things into really two categories. We're going to talk about the logistics, just like the basics, like what are some of the technical things we need to know about what's going on, and then also talk about the symbolism and some of the questions that are out there, because these are two sort of different things that we're holding in our hands. Like, how is everything supposed to play out from here? But what does it all mean? And what are some of the questions that we should be considering? So first things first, let's just take the politicians out of this. Let's just take it all out. It's a political story, but let's take it all out for a second. The American people went through a really important primary process leading up to the election of 2024. It's the primary process. This is where we get to choose our nominees for different political parties. And the person that becomes the presumptive nominee for the Republican or Democratic Party or the independent ticket, it's a different process. So I'm really going to stick with the two major parties. They are actually chosen by voters. That's how the process plays out. This is how the voters get a chance to say, this is who we would like to see at the top of the ticket. And this is why we pay attention to the conventions, because this is when a presumptive nominee becomes the official nominee. This is why it all matters. It is the voter that is making that choice. And so right now, as of today, the Democratic Party does not have an official nominee for president. They had a presumptive nominee in President Biden. Now that President Biden is denying the voters' request that he is the nominee for the party is without a top of the ticket. Yes, it is true that President Biden endorsed Vice President Harris, but that endorsement does not make her an official presumptive nominee for the party. She can become a candidate for president, but she is not the presumptive nominee right now. And that's really, now we're at a different stage in this process. So without the primary process and voters voting, delegates in each state get, based on the voters, are able to cast their ballot and choose the nominee. Every state runs their primary election a little bit different. Sometimes there's caucuses, as you know. It's a little bit of a different process. Sometimes delegates can be divided. Sometimes if the person at the top of the primary ticket that wins the most votes in the primary, sometimes all of the delegates in that state go to that person. Sometimes they're split. There's a little bit of a different process. The parties work that out and they arrive at their presumptive nominee. So we don't have that process anymore. And this is where we're sitting at. Well, where does that process actually look like? The reason why this is historic is that we've actually never seen a party without a presumptive nominee this close to election day. Yes, in the past, we've seen different politicians. The one that comes to mind that you're hearing a lot about is President Lyndon Johnson, who chose not to run for re-election. And he did so in an address, and he did so months and months and months before the election. So it's the timing of this. It's not only the way in which it was done and the extraordinary events that we've seen leading up to this point. It's also how close it is to election day. Remember, we're looking at November, but we're really looking at September. Early voting will start after Labor Day. So there's a lot of things that have to happen logistically, let alone like figuring out, you know, making sure the ballots can be printed correctly or how things are supposed to work. You know, there's a setup to all of this. there's a rather big windup. So we're seeing something happen that we've really never seen before. So some of what I'm going to discuss with you today, we have to add that little bit of an asterisk of, well, this is what we think is going to happen, but what is actually going to happen in practicality is could be something different. We think we have a template for a process, but the practical application of that is somewhat unknown. In fact, somewhat might be generous. It is unknown. The Democratic National Party is going to come together and they're going to meet. There's going to be some sort of a meeting midweek, and we may get a clearer view of what's going to take place. And right now it looks like there could be a couple different paths. So we know that the Democrats have their convention end of August, and that is when officially someone can become the party nominee. There can be a couple different ways that the party could approach this. They could have a virtual roll call. So instead of, again, going back to what things used to be like, if there was a presumptive nominee, we knew that the delegates were going to vote for this nominee and they were going to assume the official nomination. Now there seems to be a coalescing around Vice President Harris as the presumptive nominee. And different delegates or different even state delegates are coming out and saying, we're going to vote. Well, yeah, that's going to be it. She's going to be the one. And so if the Democratic Party wanted to, they could call a virtual roll call, which would all but confirm the nominee before the convention. It would be almost a way of getting a loose vote. You know, who wants what for dinner? Everybody raise your hands. Okay, we're going to have pizza. Different talking about political party, sort of the same thing. Okay, what's going on? A virtual roll call. Okay, presumptive nominee is Vice President Harris. When we get to the convention, we're going to do all the official things. If someone becomes the presumptive nominee and we get a roll call vote like that virtually, and how that would take place, we're not exactly sure. That would also allow the Harris campaign to start to solidify who her vice president would be on that ticket. So those things can start happening without it being sort of a surprise in the convention. And this is some of the logistical hurdles that the Democratic Party is going to have to figure out right now. There's a couple of things that I want to point out to you. Many of you have asked about money. Well, what happens to all this money, the tens of millions of dollars that's sitting with the Biden-Harris campaign? If Vice President Harris is the official nominee, the money is easily transferred to her because she was on the ticket. If she's not, for any reason, that big pot of money can be transferred, but there are federal election laws there's a lot of laws when it comes to donations and money. And sometimes it's not as easy. So think about it. It could be a very quick transfer. If she's remaining on the ticket, well, yeah, this is the money it was raised on the fact that she was on the ticket. Now she's on the top of the ticket. Yes, there's some changes, but yes, it's her money to use. That it doesn't become as easy, and money is a major factor in a campaign. One of the things that I've noticed is some headlines suggesting a big fundraising effort in the hours that followed since President Biden stepping back from the presidential race and endorsing Vice President Harris. There's been talk about a lot of fundraising. If you look into the detail of that, it appears that this is more grassroots fundraising. So these are folks probably like all of us that could be given, you know, $5, $10 to a campaign versus like a huge donation that could be coming in a different way. And I was curious just for my own information, well, why didn't Vice President Harris, why didn't she stay in the race longer in 2020? Like what happened there in her transition from running for president to then going into the vice presidential ticket? Like what happened? Why was there, what were the issues in the campaign? I don't really remember. That's all sort of a blur 2020, what exactly took place. And it was interesting. There is an article from the New York Times that detailed right before she officially stepped out. And the description was talking to a lot of insiders about a campaign that got a burst of energy really early on during a debate face-off with President Biden. If you remember that one of those first debates, Vice President Harris and President Biden really clashed. And she got a bit of a burst in the early part of the race. But by the end of the year, going into the next election year, when the votes would officially be cast, she lost momentum. And there was a lot of reporting about a lack of cohesive organization, a lack of seniority in the campaign, of understanding how to run campaigns in particular states where early voting was taking place, and also a question about money. When Vice President Harris officially bowed out of the presidential race, she made a mention of running out of donations, running out of money, running out of the fuel that will power a campaign. And I think that's just an important thing just to keep in the back of your mind, because with headlines become very seductive, as we know. And suddenly there's energy around a candidate. Oh, wait, there's a lot of money flowing towards that candidate. But the money and the momentum have to be used wisely in order for the candidate to capitalize on that and to actually see it through. We actually heard from Vice President Harris today for the very first time since this all happened. She was giving an address for college athletes at the White House. The president, who apparently was scheduled to be there, obviously is not there, continues to be at his home in Delaware, recovering from COVID. You're going to hear Vice President Harris talk a little bit about that, but I'd like you to hear what she had to say. This is the first time she steps to the microphone. This happened this morning, 11:30 Eastern time, after not even 24 hours of this news being out for the world.
Our President Joe Biden wanted to be here today. He is feeling much better and recovering fast, and he looks forward to getting back on the road. And I wanted to say a few words about our president. Joe Biden's legacy of accomplishment over the past 3 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, he has already, yes, you may clap. In one term, he has already surpassed the legacy of most presidents who have served two terms in office. And I first came to know President Biden through his son, Beau. We worked together as attorneys general in our states. And back then, Beau would often tell me stories about his dad. He would talk about the kind of father and the kind of man that Joe Biden is. The qualities that Beau revered in his father are the same qualities that I have seen every day in our president. His honesty, his integrity, his commitment to his faith and his family, his big heart, and his love, deep love of our country. And I am firsthand witness that every day our President Joe Biden fights for the American people, and we are deeply, deeply grateful for his service to our nation.
So you can see that she addressed the elephant in the room without directly addressing the elephant in the room, right? So it was a more of a general statement about the president, how she came to know him, some encouraging words. You have to be very cautious, by the way, when you're in office, specifically in the White House. There's that really thin line between using official events as campaign events, but there's also news to be had or heard today by the audience that you're in front of. So you have to thread that needle very carefully. But that's all that we've heard from Kamala Harris. She went on and she talked about the college athletes, very extraordinary athletes, by the way. A good reminder that the Olympics are coming up this weekend, so we all hopefully get a little bit of a break from the politics. We can bask in the wonderful triumphs of athletes, maybe take a little bit of a break. But shortly after this, according to reporting, she is going to be going to Delaware if she's not there already. She's going to Delaware because that is where the campaign headquarters are for the Biden-Harris campaign. And she's going to go and she's going to shake hands. She's going to assume really the power of that campaign and step fully in to running her candidacy for president now. So we'll see if we get any more footage from her, any more information from her. And really quick, before I jump into a question about when we're going to see the president, I want to show you this. This is actually from the Washington Post. And this is a good look for us, just really quick. If there's no virtual roll call for Vice President Harris, meaning that we don't get some sort of nomination process, a more official nomination process underway in the weeks leading up to the convention, this gives you an idea. So basically, a candidate, in order to be considered at the convention, would need 300 signatures by delegates. Once they get that signature, they're officially on the convention ballot, and that's when delegates can start voting. And basically, there's a voting process that would take place until a majority is found. And so initially, they're the delegates that are established. They can go to superdelegates. We can dive deeper into that if we actually need to. It also can be a little bit of a black hole for us right now without knowing what this is actually going to look like. Now, I want to switch from some of the technical and logistic parts of this. And if you have any questions about that, happy to answer them. Jump up on the comment section. I'll grab those and we can work through it, what we know and what we don't know. Let's just talk about symbolism. And let's also just talk about what this experience was like to watch and some questions that have come up as this process has played out about the breaking news with President Biden stepping back. It's a great reminder about this day and age that we're living in when it comes to social media. How do we find out about this news? How did we find out about the news from President Biden? We found out about it through X, through a social media platform. He also posted it on Instagram as well. I wasn't on Facebook. I'm sure it was plastered across everything. But social media was really used to broadcast this directly to the American people. This is in contrast to the past when you might get an address where we saw an address, for example, from President Johnson, where a speech was delivered and then at the end of the speech, there was a recognition that he's no longer going to be seeking a re-election or election in that particular period. And because of the way that this was delivered and because President Biden has been behind closed doors due to this COVID diagnosis, there's been all sorts of questions. I've seen them. They're all over the place about, wait a minute, is this real? There's a question about that. And I think it's an interesting question that needs to just be addressed, which is we just saw, for example, one of the largest internet outages that we've ever experienced basically early Friday morning. And some of the remnants of that is still disrupting the airline industry. Apparently there's a software update of some sort, you know, that we don't really have a great total firm explanation on that. The CrowdStrike, the group that was behind this update, you know, said it wasn't anything nefarious, but it's enough to make you nervous. And it's just a reminder that we're in this period of time where, like, if you get an email, is that really from your colleague or is it a phishing email? If we get a post on social media, is that really from the team or is it from somewhere else? And we don't have to be conspiratorial about this. I think this is actually a really good question of how is media and information shared in a way that's responsible and that you feel like you can trust it. That's a very difficult thing to do. Bill Ackman, who is a big time investor, he has a lot of followers on social media. He posted this. I just want to give you an example in case you didn't see any of this. This is sort of an example of some of what's happening online. He has a million followers. Again, he's not a media guy. He's actually an investor, a businessman, big name for himself, and controversial, certainly at times, for not only his business dealings, but some of his statements. Here's what he said. He said, one would think that a letter to the American people from the president announcing his decision to step aside would not be signed using a digital signature and would be accompanied by a photo op and a scheduled conference in the morning that followed. Instead, we have a digitally signed letter released on the president's X account, an account we know that is run by a staffer, no photo, and no live scheduled address to the American people. If I were China, I would invade Taiwan tomorrow. So those are scary words. But what he's hitting on is kind of an uncertainty of, well, what condition is President Biden in? Who made this decision? What is the explanation? We know from the note from President Biden or the letter that he said that it wasn't in the best interest of the country for him to continue. And that does leave some questions. It's a great lesson in media, because in a day and age when we feel like maybe the personal contact doesn't matter as much, it's a reminder that it really does. And so what do we know from the president this week? We understand from his announcement that he expects to talk to the nation at some point this week, towards the end of the week. We also know, though, today that the prime minister of Israel is expected in Washington, D.C., and is expected to be hosted by President Biden. We don't know exactly what that means, but there's a meeting that's supposed to be taking place, and that schedule has not been changed. Prime Minister Netanyahu will be addressing Congress on Wednesday. That is ongoing, and according to reports, he's also now going to meet with Vice President Harris because of obvious reasons, as she could be the soon-to-be presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party. That's all we have from the president, though, right now. We don't have any scheduled events. We don't know what sort of photo ops we might have with Prime Minister Netanyahu. So we are a little bit in the dark as to his current condition, how sick or healthy he is. And these are questions that I feel like when people ask them online, or there can sometimes be a hesitancy of like, oh, well, those are a bunch of critics of the Democratic Party. Sure, there are some critics. Bill Ackman's a critic of the Democratic Party. But there's also some some good questions in that too. When do we see from the president? What does his leadership style look like from here on out? He says he's staying in the presidency. So what do the next several months look like? He's president until January 2025. That's a big chunk of time. Bill Ackman was talking about Taiwan and China. What this brings up, though, is a lame duck period for a president where it can be very difficult for anyone in office to get anything done, and also an opportunity at times for those who want to take advantage, either those domestically, politically, or those adversaries on the outside, to try to poke at the American political system or American leadership to test us a little bit. So there's a lot of reasons to watch this. And it's also a good reminder about why an address matters, why a debate matters live, why an address, for example, at a national convention matters, because it's not just about the information. It's also about the tone. It's about the cadence. It's how someone looks. It's how they're looking into the camera, how they're addressing you. All those things are a factor, and we can't ignore that. So there are some questions here. And perhaps we'll get some more answers by the end of the week. We have some defining things on the calendar, such as a major visit from a world leader, but we'll see what transpires. And right now, I don't have any more information from you. I checked the schedule. The president's getting a briefing this morning, but we don't have any more information. So let me just see if any of you have any thoughts on that too. That's interesting. Kathy's bringing up the thought of, oh, this is sort of interesting comparing it to the royal family. You know, when are you going to see Princess Kate? When are you not? What does it look like? All the questions about her health. And there is a lesson there that the public, despite the age that we're in, that really feels like we're indulging in superficiality, still needs a personal connection. And that doesn't really matter what party you're in or what politics you have. It's a reminder as to that. Got a great question from Virginia. I want to go ahead and play this question. She sent us a voice note. So let's listen in.
Harris at the top of the ticket. Will we see any significant changes in the Democratic platform?
Great question. What could we possibly see? What would be some of the changes? In the early pontification about what this could look like, what does a Harris ticket look like with her at the very top? There's been some questions about whether or not the Democratic Party will further emphasize women, the status of women in American society, and specifically the abortion issue, because President Trump was in office when Roe v. Wade was overturned. He was able to appoint a series of judges that led, arguably by some, to that conclusion. And so we'll never know what another Supreme Court would look like with that issue. That's the only Supreme Court that we have. And that case that challenged Roe v. Wade was many years in the making. So each party, what's I think important to know is that each party actually already has their platform, and that is independent of the candidate. In fact, we have one from the Democratic Party. Let me go ahead and pull it up. You can look at it, and it'll tell you, here's the Democratic Party platform. And it goes through a series of different important things: the economy, healthcare, the climate crisis, and leadership. That's what the Democrats are looking at. You can also go over to the Republicans too. And there's actually a notable change with the Republicans. And did you notice that Vice President Harris has mentioned 2025? We've talked a little bit about Project 2025 here on Smarter News and how that was a combination of work that was put together by the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, and Democrats are trying to suggest that this will be the agenda for the Republican Party, Project 2025. Well, the Republicans were trying to respond to that because they were trying to distance themselves from something that they said did not represent their true platform. And so during the RNC, the Republicans actually released what they're calling Agenda 47, for the 47th president of the United States. And it has a series of different details about immigration, about here's homelessness, here's the message to American workers, here's jobs. So you can actually go through both of these things, and I can include these in the show notes. I think it's important to source these to the parties. They're working on them, again, independent of the candidate, but each candidate will have a different way of taking parts of the party platform and emphasizing them in whatever way they think is actually going to land with voters. So let's talk about that part. Because if President Harris is part of a broader strategy, or the Democrats will try to use that as part of a broader strategy to reach out to women voters and to focus on the abortion issue, why would they do that? So two thoughts on that. One, we know that there are more women voters in America than men, and we vote at higher rates than men, which means we show up and actually vote more than male voters do. That's at least been what's happened in the past. We'll see if that actually happens with this current cycle as well. If I look across, and we don't have any good polling, so you know that. We have no good polling necessarily on Harris at the top of the ticket because President Biden was up there. So we don't really know what voters, how they're going to react differently, depending if they thought they could vote for someone different. But just taking a quick perusal of swing state polling, I was curious about this today. You know, these are the states that really could determine the election because other states like California were automatically going to assign, well, all of California electoral votes are likely going to go to the Democrats. So we don't think of that as a swing state, but we're going to think of Michigan as a swing state or Pennsylvania as a swing state, up for grabs, and that can determine the election. If you look at polling consistently over the last several months, the economy continues to be the major number one issue for voters. That's not unlike other election cycles, by the way. When voters are really asked what matters most to them, usually it is something like the economy or national security over a social issue that could be something that is up for debate or a lot of conversation online. When you really strip it away, it kind of goes down to basics. And I remember a Democratic strategist, longtime Democratic strategist, Joe Trippi, told me this during the 2012 campaign. We're sitting in the hallway. We're looking at the votes that were coming in. It was election night. And I was asking him whether or not he was surprised or what he thought about the election. He said, well, not really. Most elections come down to basic things. You know, do I have a job? What does the future look like for my children? And am I safe? It's like those are the kind of the basic things that people always go back to. So it's something to keep in mind really for both of these parties about whether or not they're addressing the number one concern of voters and whether or not switching out the candidates would deliver a different result. So thought that was interesting. Hopefully that answered the question for you, Virginia. So the platform in and of itself likely is established. The candidate and the way the candidate emphasizes or delivers that platform is always something that can change depending on the personality or the personal interests of that candidate. Okay, another great question we got from Mel. This was a question about just the process overall. Let me read this to you. Why would the potential new Democratic candidate not have to follow all the laws and jump through all of the legal hoops that RFK Jr. has been working through to get on the state's ballots? I'm really not understanding this part of the election process. Could you explain this to help me understand why all the legality for the independent candidates, but not for the parties? It's a great question, Mel. It's because the entire political system right now is set up for these two political parties. And I don't say that in an opinion, like trying to make some sort of broad statement about the American political process. It's just that the parties have a system set up. The laws and everything are sort of surrounding the existence of these parties. And an independent candidate has a harder path because they have to basically fight and argue to get on the ballots in all of these states. And every state has a different way of getting on the ballot. So it's an extraordinarily big effort. We actually heard from RFK Jr. shortly after the news that broke about President Biden. And I wanted to play some sound from him so you could hear this.
A year ago, a little over a year ago, when I entered this race, I predicted that President Biden suffered from a degenerative condition that was not going to improve and that it would make it impossible for him to govern effectively. The reaction of the DNC to that obvious condition was to hide it from the American public and to use their power over the Democratic Party nomination process to make sure that nobody could compete with President Biden in a way that would expose his deficiencies. And as a result, we are where we are today, which is in a period of crisis.
So those are the opinions from RFK Jr. He goes on to talk about in the statement how difficult it is to maneuver as an independent candidate, that he would be open to speaking to the officials from the Democrat Party, to what end, he's not very specific, but also was talking about getting on the debate stage. And remember, we do have a tentative debate. Well, there was a tentative debate scheduled in September between the Biden-Harris campaign and the Trump campaign. I'm sort of thinking through this now. And whether or not that continues, that'll hold, whether or not there's a vice presidential debate, whether that continues or that holds is is really a big question. You know, I was thinking about this. You saw, we talked about Dana White. He's the CEO of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And this is a mixed martial arts league that, you know, really has exploded over the years. He introduced President Trump. But there's a great comparison to sports and politics here, because oftentimes fighters know who they're going to fight months in advance. And all of their training is geared towards that particular fighter. You know, if the fighter is a good wrestler, if the fighter is a good puncher, if they're quick, if they're slow, what do they bring to the table? They're watching tapes or thinking through strategy. But getting close to the fight, there's oftentimes the fighters get injured and then suddenly a new fighter comes in and there's a lot of energy over that fighter. But the person that's been preparing the longest time to fight a particular opponent is instantly a little bit at a disadvantage because they've invested all this time moving in one direction and suddenly they have to switch gears. This is true, really, you can make this argument really for any sport or competition. You know, you're preparing for a certain opponent and then suddenly things change. And that's not an easy thing to do. You know, the Republican Party could be talking, oh, this is the same, you know, it's no big deal. It's the Biden ticket, it's the same thing. It doesn't really matter. But this is going to be a very different campaign. The ticket's going to look different. It's going to sound different. It's going to be a completely different, likely a completely different strategy, even if the platform is the same. And there's a real question for Republicans here about how they're going to adjust and how they really, really will fare against a ticket with Vice President Harris at the top and really an unknown as her running mate, and how that could play out in some key swing states. We know J.D. Vance, the senator from Ohio, has already been very specific that he is going to park it in these swing states and talk to these workers and these people that feel forgotten in these states. Well, what happens if Vice President Harris decides to choose the governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, to join her on the ticket? And he says, yes. Well, he's an interesting politician because he's been able to speak to both sides because Pennsylvania is such a swing state. You know, how would he size up against a J.D. Vance? So this could be a very challenging time for both parties, even though there's a lot of focus on the Democrats right now. It's certainly a challenge for the Republicans too, about, you know, what this looks like going forward. Does anyone have any other questions before I move on? I have a quick other comment to news item that I want to show you before we leave. And I think this kind of brings us back down to earth, because for both political parties right now, obviously there's a lot of focus on the platforms, the policies, and the tone, all of it. But there is a question still about security after the attempted assassination of President Trump. And by the way, can I mention one thing for you real quick? I get asked that question a lot. Why do you not say former President Trump every single time you say President Trump? One person said, I think it sounds like you're supporting him. That's the last thing I want to do, actually, is try to, in my language, support a certain candidate. What I try to do is on first reference, say former President Trump. But in general, I don't like referring to any presidents, past or current presidents, as their last name, because I think it sounds disrespectful when people started to say Obama this, Obama that, Bush this. I mean, there's only a handful of people that have ever served as president of the United States. And I believe you know who the president of the United States is. So I don't think you're confused. So I'm just trying to show respect. Perhaps I should weave in Mr. Trump more. That might be a good way to do it as well. But I hesitate just because I want to give them a title. Because they're president of the United States, not to editorialize. Anyhow, with the attempted assassination of former President Trump, there's been a new look at security. And really, this is a question for all campaigns. You know, what does security look like? What about the Secret Service? How prepared are we in the future? What about these large campaign events? You have new people that are going to come on the campaign. How prepared are we for some of these particulars? What does this look like? You know, what is this, the safety of the electoral process in America? We're not just talking about voting. We're just talking about keeping the candidates safe. And so on Capitol Hill today, we have the head of the Secret Service testifying. She was subpoenaed to testify in front of the House Committee on Oversight. And so she's in the process of answering questions. We grabbed some of them from the very beginning. And I wanted you to listen to some back and forth with Congressman Jamie Raskin, who's a Democrat, one of the ranking Democrats on this committee. And I just want you to hear some of the back and forth about what these questions sound like and feel like.
Been reported that before former President Trump got up on the stage at around 6 p.m. on Saturday, July 13th, that the local police had identified and even photographed a man who was acting suspiciously. And this man, who turned out to be the gunman, had been flagged as a potential threat. Is that accurate?
What I can say is that the individual was identified as suspicious.
So he was known to be suspicious before former President Trump took the stage.
That is the information I have received.
Why was he allowed to take the stage with a suspicious person having been identified in the Crown?
So I appreciate the question, and I'd like to make 2 points. If the detail had been past information that there was a threat, the detail would never have brought the former president out onto stage. That is what we do, and that is who we are. We are charged with protecting all of our protectees.
So you distinguish between someone who is suspicious and someone who's threatening, is that right?
We do. There are a number of times at protective events where suspicious people are identified, and those individuals have to be investigated and determined what is it that identifies that person as suspicious.
So you see some of the back and forth. She hasn't, at least from what we've seen, and again, there's a lot to look through here. We don't have a ton of new information. There's a lot of reporting sort of on the sidelines that are not well sourced about this individual, the shooter, and how he scoped out the particular area and whether he was someone that was suspicious versus a threat. And if you do think, you know, we're just kind of playing this out, would do all suspicious people stop events from now on? You know, how does security change in light of what took place? And even now, we're coming on, you know, 2 weeks later, we still don't have a ton of information confirmed about this shooter and his motivation and his profile. And whether or not we'll get that is really a question. How helpful that is to securing future political events really is at the crux of all of this too. Because we think we've seen wild times and that they're behind us somehow in the rearview mirror. But the reality is no one has that crystal ball for the future. And so what we think is the uncertainty, which is, well, how are Democrats actually going to solidify their nominee, could look, you know, unfortunately very different depending on the news cycle that we see from this point on. So let me just tell you where we're at right now with this process. You have President Biden out of the race. We have his endorsement of Vice President Harris. We have party chairs for most states. So these are the head of the party that's kind of overseeing, let's say, the Republican or the Democratic Party in each of the states, but this case, the Democratic Party. We have the party chairs endorsing her. We have delegations from Louisiana, New Hampshire, Tennessee, North Carolina, and South Carolina also endorsing her. We have a handful of prominent governors, including Gavin Newsom and New York's Kathy Hochul. California's Gavin Newsom supporting her. We have a series of different Democratic senators and House Democrats have lined up behind the president. That's from the Washington Post, from the vice president, I should say. We still don't, you know, Barack Obama was very tepid. He didn't go ahead and endorse Vice President Harris. Nancy Pelosi, up until this recording, has not. Michael Bloomberg, also a name who did not. And the question there is that strategic because they actually don't want Vice President Harris at the top of the ticket, or is it because they actually just want to address President Biden in these early statements and then they're going to come out and endorse her later? Again, those endorsements do not actually equal her official nomination for the party platform. And so we're going to wait and see. What's going to happen from here on out. Christian asked this question: what is the process for other potential candidates to come forward? That's a great question, Christian, and I'm not exactly sure whether or not someone can just throw their hat into the ring. You know, if it's an open convention and they can collect enough signatures from delegates, we could potentially see another name. And I suppose if someone decided that they just wanted to step up and say, "I'm going to run," I don't know exactly how that works with the party, but there has to be a way for it to, because that's what a quote unquote open convention is. That actually brings up a really important point, which is that one of the critiques of the Biden campaign up until this point was that Biden was not tested. Yes, he was tested as President Biden was tested because he's the president, but the party didn't have to work out any kinks, right? He's the president of the United States. He's running with the vice president. There's not anything new. There's not going to be a debate between other Democrats on the ticket. He had a challenge, you know, a challenger from Minnesota, congressman from Minnesota. Is it Dean Phillips? I'm just going to double check here. Yes, Dean Phillips. But there was, he didn't have the support to warrant a debate between the candidates. Even though that process can be messy for political parties, it also tests candidates to see how well they do, how well they think on their feet, how well they represent the political platform, you know, how well they're able to go against somebody and make a strong point. President Trump did not participate in the debates for the Republicans, but the Republican Party was able to watch different personalities play out on stage. And eventually, the Republican Party got behind President Trump. From what we know he has his critics, but they got behind it. They watched this process play out for those that were thinking, well, maybe Governor DeSantis is the one. Maybe former Governor Haley is the one. They were able to kind of to watch how these campaigns played out. How did these campaigns play with voters? The Democrats are not going to have that opportunity really with any candidate, but specifically with Vice President Harris too right now. Yes, they have the track record for the last couple of years. Whether or not that track record plays well with voters is an entirely different question. So that's something that we'll continue to watch. And I think it's part of that political process. It doesn't feel great sometimes watching, but you realize that it actually serves a purpose. Like it's never, I don't personally find it super fun just to watch for hours on end. People fight each other. Unless it's the UFC, and then I'm all in because I'm like, these are athletes, and it's 25 minutes, and I can kind of get behind it depending on the match. And it's only 15 minutes. The political process is completely different, and it can feel personal and ugly and not so great. But there's a sorting out that's taking place in the party there that is a question for how Democrats are going to handle, and also how the Democratic Party is going to speak to voters who many of them made their choice and chose Joe Biden to be at the top of the ticket. How are they going to engage those voters, millions of them who cast their ballot, so they know that, one, they recognize who they chose, two, recognize that things have changed, and also honor those voters' requests? Because if the party doesn't do that, the party looks like it's playing kingmaker. And that's been a critique, quite frankly, of the political party systems for years. And that's a challenge. That's another challenge for the Democrats right now. So Melanie's asking from Arkansas, will we have the opportunity to see a debate between Donald Trump and the new Democrat nominee? That's a question, Melanie. We're not quite sure. We know that there was one on the calendar agreed to by the campaigns themselves, not by the nonpartisan nonprofit Commission on Presidential Debates. It's completely different. This was an agreement. So we'll see if it actually takes place. Oh, interesting. Kathy's bringing us some breaking news. She said that Reuters is now saying that Nancy Pelosi endorsed Kamala Harris. So let's see. I don't see that on her X feed. Let me see if I see it here too. Maybe it's come up. Live updates. Here it is. Kathy's with some breaking news for us. I appreciate that, Kathy. While I'm on, let's see. Let me see if I can pull this up and I can show you. Okay, so it looks like it's in a statement. So this is interesting. People are going to choose different ways to make announcements. So let me read. This is from the LA Times. Pelosi endorses Harris, who gains quick support among leading Democrats. Less than 24 hours after after President Biden ended his reelection bid, a slew of Democratic leaders threw their support behind Vice President Kamala Harris, including her highly influential Bay Area colleague, San Francisco Rep. Nancy Pelosi. Harris won the topmost endorsement Sunday when Biden backed her to be his successor later Monday. So here we are into today. Pelosi gave her support to Harris with immense pride and limitless optimism for our country's future. Let me read the exact quote. Quote, officially, I've seen Kamala Harris' strength and courage as a champion for working families, notably fighting for a woman's right to choose. There we go back to that question about what the platform is going to look like. What's going to be emphasized? Personally, I've known Kamala Harris for decades as rooted in strong values, faith, and a commitment to public service. Pelosi went on, politically, make no mistake, Kamala Harris as a woman in politics is brilliantly astute. And I have full confidence that she will lead us to victory in November. I mean, that is a full-throated endorsement. And also, do you see what happened there? Look at what we learned from that statement. And this just shows you Congresswoman Pelosi's political acumen, too. She addresses what the issue is going to be, women. She also takes on critics or even reporting, such as mine at the beginning of this broadcast, that shared some of the concerns about the Harris campaign in the past were not very politically mature, didn't really know how to campaign fundraise and use those campaign fundraising dollars in a good way that continued momentum. See, she purposely said, no, she's got it and she's going to be able to do this. So we'll see. We'll see if that actually takes place. Kathy, thank you so much. You get producer credits for today's scoop. I appreciate that. See, things are developing very quickly, and that's we're just going to have to stay close. So hopefully this, again, gives you a good idea as to some of what we know and some of what we don't know. We'll continue to watch this process play out, and we'll continue to keep you updated as we get more information throughout the week. I think the key things to watch for are the meeting on Wednesday from the Democratic National Party. What is this going to look like? How are they going to speak about this process? What language they're using? What are some of the logistical things that we need to know? But really the burning question right now is, when are we going to see President Biden? What does he look like? What does he say? We already know that there's some calls from Republican critics for him to step away from the presidency, saying, well, if he can't run for office, then he shouldn't remain president. You know, that's an argument about whether those two things go together. I'll leave that to you to decide whether or not they do. But that's really the burning question going into this week of what does President Biden do? What is next from him? And we'll continue to watch this very high profile visit by one of America's key allies in the Middle East, Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel, who's going to be speaking about some really important things. On that, by the way, we saw over the weekend, this was the first time that we saw the Houthis, a terrorist group as designated by the United States State Department, use a drone to attack Israel within Israel's borders. And Israel then attacked the Houthis in Yemen. So when we think about a conflict spreading, we know the Houthis are backed by Iran. This is another example of the conflict between Israel and Hamas spreading. And so this visit by the prime minister is happening at a critical time. It's a reminder that despite all the political headlines that are happening here at home, there's a broader world and an event from the outside, even an event like a hurricane, like we saw over the last several weeks, could be that curveball that changes the election too. It's not just about the political parties. It's also about keeping our heads up and our eyes out at the horizon about what else we need to pay attention to and not get too drawn down by some of the internal workings of domestic politics here in America, albeit fascinating, as my five-year-old is also observed. And we're, of course, going to continue to watch. So thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it. Keep those questions coming. And remember, you can send us a voice memo. You just take your phone out, record a voice memo, send it to scoop@smarternews.com. I love hearing your voice, and it allows us to address your questions straight on. And we want to make sure that this is a service for you during this time. And we look forward to your questions and comments. So scoop@smarternews.com, and we'll be here throughout the week. Quick, concise, nonpartisan news, smarternews.com. Thanks so much for your support, and I look forward to seeing you each and every day, and thanks for being on this wild ride with us yet again. All right, guys, have a great week. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you for believing in quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Every time you join us or share or save our content, you help us build a solution in news, and we are so grateful. We have a few other ways you can support our mission, from joining our insider community Scoop, to shopping our gear at our Smarter Shop, to just telling a friend. The best way to do any of this is to visit smarternews.com or follow us at Smarter News on social media. Don't worry, we put all of this in the captions so it's easy for you. Plus, we added our email just in case you want to drop us a note. We always love hearing from you. Thank you for helping us deliver news smarter.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.